All right. Good morning, everybody. So I do want to take a little bit of a point of privilege this morning, just because I'm up here. Because if you've been with us for a while, you know that we're actually still in the middle of our minister search. And so I would continue to ask that you guys pray. We continue to pray for the minister that God is bringing to us. And so I get to fill in this morning and bring us our message, not being a minister. And so one of the things I at least want to be able to point out is a lot of the times I sit down after working, after eating a meal with my family, and I sit down with my Bible, with my computer, and start putting this message together. And I think sometimes people forget that that's all well and good, but there's no way that I would be able to do any of that, do any of the study, if not for my amazing wife that is tending to our three littles as I'm sitting there reading and studying and trying to put some things together. She's not in here because she's, again, taking our kids over to Children's Church, but I at least wanted publicly to acknowledge and for us to just circle back, because there's no way that I'd be able to do this if not for her helping to tend our kids so that we could do this, right? So as I'm sitting there working on this lesson and putting it together, most oftentimes my stomach starts to grumble a little bit, and that's what leads me to the pantry, right? And I open it up, and I'm a notorious snacker after dinner, and I probably watch way too many YouTube food videos, honestly, if I'm being honest. But as I'm walking at that pantry and I'm eating my little salty, savory snacks, it's like, ooh, that could be a great idea there. So a lot of that inspiration coming from the food pantry this morning. But I want to start out with a story. Damon West. Anybody ever heard of Damon West before? Right. So Damon West was actually a very talented young man. He was a great football player. His dad was a football coach. He seemed to have it all figured out. He was highly recruited out of high school, and finally, he ended up at the University of North Texas, where he got to play. But after playing for a while, he suffered a career-ending injury. I believe it was a shoulder injury that ruined any hopes of him finishing out not just his college career, but his ability to play at the next level. And to be able to cope with this injury, he began to self-medicate. He began to do some illicit drugs to help him deal with the pain and the suffering and all of the disappointments that he had faced in his life. And actually, shortly thereafter, at his time at UNT, he ended up getting a job and a career. He worked in Congress for a little bit of time, and then he picked up a job at UBS Bank, the United Bank of Switzerland, and he was a stockbroker. It was during his time that he was a stockbroker that he was introduced to methamphetamines for the very first time. And the addiction hit him hard, to the point where he became homeless. He did everything he could to feed his addiction, to the point where he was burglarizing and breaking into homes to fund his habit, to the tune of 50 break-ins for over $1 million. And in 2008, he was arrested, and he was sentenced to 65 years in prison. It was during this time that he met an older inmate who gave him some advice about surviving in prison. The older inmate looked at him and said, "Damon, I want you to think about prison like this boiling pot of water." He said, "Some people come into prison and they're like carrots. If I stick a carrot in a boiling pot of water, the carrot started out hard. It started out firm. And when placed in this boiling pot of water, over time, what happens is this carrot that started out so firm and so hard becomes soft because of the heat and the pressure that's in the pot." He said, "Now some people enter into prison, they're like an egg. An egg started out with a hard outer shell, but a really soft and mushy inside." He said, "What happens when that egg gets put in that pot of boiling water? where that boiling water eventually changes that egg. That egg that might have had a harder outer shell but a soft inside eventually becomes hard all the way through. And the inmate said, Damon, for some people, that's what prison does to them. He said, but I want you to think about the lowly coffee bean. He said, if I put a coffee bean in a pot of boiling water, what happens? He said, in fact, we actually can't call it water anymore. We have to call it coffee. Because you see, that one little thing didn't allow its environment to change it. It instead changed the environment around it. He said, West, if you want to survive prison, don't be a carrot, don't be an egg, be a coffee bean. Don't allow the environment to change you, but you instead change your situation and change the environment that you're dealing in. And that's exactly what West did. He's a motivational speaker to this day. But when I heard this story for the very first time, I couldn't help but draw some parallels to what Jesus has shown us over and over again. See, Jesus had a few stories about food, too. But see, Jesus didn't give us an illustration of an egg or a carrot or even a coffee bean. Jesus said, hey, I want you to be like salt. See, in Matthew 5, we see Jesus telling us, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And see, I think very similar to the story that Damon West shares about his experience, I think Jesus very intentionally chose salt as well, because just like coffee, salt doesn't get changed. Salt changes the environment around it, right? When you think about pure salt is unable to be impacted by its surroundings, and instead it impacts everything else around its environment. Now, have we ever thought about what that actually means? I mean, what's so special about salt? Something that we take so for granted that we put into shakers on restaurant tables and in our pantries to use whenever we want. But see, salt is powerful, and especially in the way that it interacts with water. See, this is important because life itself can't exist without water. And I know sometimes when we think about our Bible study and we think about this idea of salt in the ancient world, we're like, man, salt is so important because salt preserves and used it as a preservative of that time. But have you ever thought about it, how exactly that works? So again, for those that know me, you know that I'm a science teacher by trade. I taught science for many, many years. And so when you look at salt through a scientific lens, there's something very special and specific that happens. See, when salt gets dissolved, it breaks into these pieces called ions. And these ions, they go and they bind themselves to any available water that exists. And so in the ancient world, when people would use salt to preserve, what it would actually do is that salt would bind itself, it would hold on to any available water that existed, whether it be on a piece of meat, whether it be whatever it was, it bound itself to that water. And because of that, mold, bacteria, rot could not exist because it held on to any available water. See, salt didn't cover up spoilage. Salt changed its environment so that the spoilage and rot cannot exist, simply because salt would hold on to water. And we think about us being salt. What does it look like for us to bind ourselves and hold on to the living water that is Jesus? We see an example of this. If you've got your Bibles, turn to John chapter 4. John chapter 4, we're going to start in verse 4. We see in this example a woman walking up to Jesus. She comes to Jesus. She's carrying a lot of shame. Let's see what happens. It says, now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. And it was about noon when a Samaritan woman came to draw water. Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? See, his disciples had gone into town to buy food. I'm going to pause this there because if you've been studying the Bible with us for a while, you know that there's some unique things about this interaction. For one, it's about noon. It's the hottest part of the day, and this woman is coming to draw water, which means she's an outsider from her people. Normally, people would come draw water at the beginning of the day when it's not as hot. And here she is. She is forced to come in the middle of the day because she couldn't be around everybody else that was coming in the morning. This is Samaria. This is the group of people that Jews would not associate with because Jews viewed them as half-blooded, right? They weren't pure. And so Jesus is talking to this woman. She's an outcast from her own group. She's an outcast from the Jewish people. So the Samaritan woman said to him, you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? Because Jews did not associate with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it was that was asking you for a drink, you'd have asked him and he would have given you living water. He said, sir, the woman said, you've nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who has given us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock? Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water is going to be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. The woman said, sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming back here to draw water. We see this woman coming to Jesus, and she clings to him. Later on in this passage, he begins to tell her every single thing that she has done in her life. And it'd be fine and dandy if the story ended there, but it doesn't. See, later on in a few verses, she has clung to him. She listens to his every single word. And what happens doesn't just stop with her. It doesn't just end with her. We see that it impacts the environment. Later on in John chapter 4, then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who's told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? And so they came out of the town and made their way toward him. And later on, a few verses, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed for 2 days. Because of his words, many more became believers. She didn't just cling and leave it at that. By clinging to the living water, she was able to impact not just her life, but the life of her entire village, because she was able to hold on to the living water that is Christ. See, just like salt preserves by clinging to water, when we cling to Jesus, it brings about meaningful change in our environments around us. So we've got to start there. Are we clinging to Jesus? Because salt changes what the environment allows. It limits where decay can live because it's holding on to water. And we're called to do the same. But there's another effect that salt has, and I'm sure many of you are going to say, of course it does, right? But the same salt that preserves will also make you extremely thirsty. See, salt doesn't just protect life. It points you to the need for water. It points you to the need for living water. See, think about the last time you put something extremely salty in your mouth, and you end up craving water in order to satisfy the thirst that you have. And I think it's the same way when we as believers act like salt. We should make those around us crave water, crave Jesus. Again, our example is going to be over in Acts 2, probably a very familiar passage to many of us. It says in Acts 2, starting verse 42, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together. They were salt together. They had everything in common. They sold their property, their possessions, to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And because of this, the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Here in Acts, if you looked a few chapters earlier, we find ourselves right after Pentecost. This is after the Holy Spirit has descended upon the apostles, and Peter has stood up and given this amazing lesson that points people to their need for Jesus. And people gathered together, ate together, and God added to their number daily. See, when God's people acts as salt, not only does it preserve because we hold on to Jesus, but it points people. It creates a thirst. People looked at the Acts 2 church and says, what is going on with this group of people that they're acting this way? And it all pointed back to Jesus. It made people thirsty for something more in their life. See, so not only does salt cling to water and preserve, not only does salt make us thirsty, but generally speaking, if you were to think about salt, one of the most general ways that we'd say is salt seasons our food. But what exactly does that mean? All my young people are laughing, thank you. So what exactly does it mean to season our food? Have you ever thought about that? Oh yeah, salt's a great seasoning. When we use salt as a seasoning, it can actually cut bitterness, and at the same time, it elevates sweetness. Has anybody ever tried Brussels sprouts before and just thought, man, they're just way too bitter for me? Next time you try that, add a little pinch of salt. And you might notice that just adding a little bit of salt to those Brussels sprouts just cuts away at the bitterness a little bit, right? It just takes the bitterness off a little bit. If you go to Luby's later on, you try it, report back. You can let us know, right? But in the same way, salt can also enhance sweetness, right? Has anybody ever tried salted caramel, right? Or put salt on chocolate? It can enhance the sweetness. It serves as the seasoning. But I think it's the same way for us. See, God uses his people in lives to help cut the bitterness of life, but also to enhance the sweetness that we get to experience. I know some of the sweetest memories I have are with fellow believers, many of which are in this church. Some of the most heartbreaking times that I've faced in my life have been a little bit less bitter because of the very people in this auditorium this morning. See, salt is seasoning. It doesn't create joy out of thin air, but it can definitely multiply it. And so we were already over in Acts 2. I want us to turn a few pages over to Acts 16, because we're going to see an example of this. In Acts 16, starting verse 23, here we see Paul and Silas. It says, after they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison. The jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. When he received these orders, he put them in the inner cell and fastened their feet in the stocks. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. Here we see Paul and Silas in probably one of those bitter circumstances we can find ourselves. They're in prison, and yet because they're together, they sing songs to God. Suddenly, there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. At once all the prison doors flew open and everyone's chains came loose. The jailer woke up, and when he saw the prison doors open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself because he thought the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted, "Don't harm yourself. We're all here." Jailer called for lights and he rushed in and he fell trembling before Paul and Silas. He then brought them out and asked, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" They replied, "Believe in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." Then they spoke the word of the Lord to him and to all the others in his house. At that hour of the night, the jailer took them and washed their wounds. Then immediately he and all his household were baptized. The jailer brought them into his house and set a meal before them. He was filled with joy because he had come to believe in God, he and his whole household. See, here we see both how God has used both Paul and Silas, even in what could be one of the most bitter moments in history. They're bound, they're beaten, they're in prison, and they choose to sing songs to God. And some of that bitterness erodes away a little bit. And God brings about an earthquake, and even for the jailer, he thinks to himself, "My life is over because these prisoners are going to escape." And yet they didn't. And because of that, we have one of the most sweet, sweet illustrations of God's grace. Because in that moment, that jailer pulls Paul and Silas out. And again, it's not just the jailer's life that is impacted, but his entire surrounding, his environment is impacted because his entire household comes to believe in Jesus. He washes their wounds. He shares a meal with them. Because a few people were willing to be like salt. So whether it's preserving because we cling to the living water that is Christ and we impact a village, whether it's by pointing people toward their need for Christ and creating a thirst because of how salty we are and God adding to the members of the church daily because we point to Christ, or whether it's by seasoning life's bitter and sweet moments, I think Jesus very intentionally says, be salt so that you're not changed by your surroundings, but instead you're the ones doing the changing to the environment that's around us. So my challenge to us this morning is this, and it goes back to that verse in Matthew that we looked at. He says, "You're the salt, but if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again?" My question is, have you lost your saltiness this morning? Now, you know what's interesting about this verse? You want to know what's interesting about this? Is the fact that pure salt, if we're talking about pure salt, it actually can never lose its saltiness. Pure salt never becomes less salty with time. But what actually happened, especially in the ancient world, there was never truly pure salt. It was salt mixed in with other trace minerals or other contaminants, not just the salt itself. And that over time, what would actually happen with that mixture is the pure salt would be dissolved away, leaving only the junk behind that wasn't salty. And that's what had to be thrown away. That's what lost its saltiness, is that junk that was left after the pure salt was washed away. And so I think that's exactly the warning, but also the hope that we have this morning. See, Jesus didn't come to the earth so that we could be junk mixed with salt. Right? That's not what Jesus calls us to. He came to give us life. In John 10:10, right, Jesus says, "The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy and put junk in our lives." He's trying to take away from us the purity of the salt that God calls us to. But Jesus says, I came that they could have life and have it to the full. Jesus didn't say, I came that you could have life to the full one day. I didn't say, I came so you could have life in the future. No, he said, I came to give you life and have it to the full now. Eternity starts now. So my question isn't just, have you lost your saltiness? It's what's been diluting you today. Have we allowed the junk of this world to mix in with the salt that Jesus has poured into our lives to give to others? Are we seeing that our pureness, our salt has been ripped away from us, where all we are dealing with is the junk that it leaves behind? But I think God is calling us, Jesus is calling us back and say, come back to me, cling to me so you can preserve what's holy around you. Come back to me so that you can point others to their thirst and their need for me. Come back to me so that you can season your life with all the joys and all the bitterness that it has to cut it with a little bit of salt. Will you come back to the source of that salt this morning so that what's left in you is the real thing and not the junk that's left behind? You've got a chance to do that this morning. If you have any needs, come now as we stand and as we sing.